Time for another DraftPhysics.com video presentation. So, kind of some more of this Mythbuster kind of stuff. The myth of measurement, I guess, would be trying to just point out that, first, the physics isn't that complicated, and it really should have been resolved by now that physicists would pay some attention and clean this mess up. Lots of misconceptions, and so in this, something I didn't point out, and so I'm going to just reference a couple of the points and talk some more about those. So here they're using clay, to measure. And what are they measuring? They're measuring energy that moved matter. Now we know the energy kept going in the sense that it moves the matter moves to a new location. In the process of moving to a new location, it's disturbing the external atmosphere, and the energy continues to move somewhere else and does other things. So you're trying to capture some sort of footprint of the energy that didn't really use the energy. I mean, it's not gone, it's just a remnant of it, but it sort of has to be material. You have to move matter, and by moving the matter, you'll show how much energy there was. Some kind of crap like that. Well, anyway, so the point is that this clay experiment is like the inverse of the clay experiment done in the 1730s that established mv squared as a reasonable definition of energy. And frankly, it was, in my opinion, totally unreasonable, because they had already argued that if we accept this new version of energy, then we have a paradox, in the sense that the new version makes momentum a free energy mechanism. And if you believe in momentum as still being viable, then this new version of energy is free energy. So it doesn't work. The two of them aren't compatible. One has to go and one has to stay, because you have the paradox of free energy if you think the two of them are compatible or viable. And obviously Newton got all right answers with just momentum, so there wasn't much good reason to switch. Galileo also, and Descartes. But anyway, so here you just have the same experiment. You're using clay, the deformation of clay, to establish, using it as a measuring tool. So if they had done the experiment the way it was done in the 1700s, I didn't want to do that. I think I wanted to do something different than that. Yeah, probably. I'm pretty sure I intended to do something different. I think I want to do this and this. All right. So the 1700 experiment there. So he has a rod and a blob of clay on it, to keep it all symmetrical, and he's just going to compress the blob of clay, with an impact. And how much it's compressed will tell you how much energy there was, how much clay you displaced in the process. Like I said, you're moving the clay to new positions, and in those new positions you're pushing the atmosphere, blah blah blah. Now the other experiment was to take the rod, for example, and just penetrate the clay, with the impediment, and then measure how far the rod goes into the clay. So in the 1735, let's say, they did this, and they found that twice the velocity equals four times, the depth. So the rod would go four times deeper into the clay. Now, I haven't seen any of this redone, so who knows if it actually did turn out that way. But regardless, that's the result they got. And here, in this experiment, it's twice the velocity, only twice the compression of the clay. All right, so there's no indication of the extra. Now, I would argue that we already know from lots of other experiments that it's this pressure thing is the same as weight. And the fact is that twice the velocity equals twice the weight. It doesn't equal four times the weight. So you move something twice as fast into a spring, and it won't compress the spring four times as much. It'll compress the spring twice as much. So I double the velocity, and I get twice the compression out of the spring, which means I got twice the amount of weight. is the springs are proportional. A certain amount of compression per the amount of weight you add. It compresses the same amount for each 100 pounds, is exactly the same amount of compression. So if you add, 300 pounds, then you get 300 units of compression distance, 3 units, until you run out of spring, of course. So, of course, the spring has a limitation. You can't compress the spring all the way and still expect it to compress some more. That would be unrealistic and silly. So you have lots of data, okay, demonstrating that, yes, this is the right answer. I mean, this clay experiment is better than this clay experiment. You have so little evidence of this four times. Now they turn this into car crashes. So instead of compressing clay, they're compressing a car. Okay. But you'd still look at it as a hunk of clay. I mean, it's just a mechanism that you can smash. Now, the part I'm going to play in this video eventually is him crushing a can and saying, and it sort of triggered me, that the can doesn't compress evenly. Well, it sort of does, just like a spring, until you get to a certain point, and then you've taken all the compressibility out of the can. But the fact is that it is a little uneven to start. I mean, when you start with the can, okay, it's not really in the picture, it has a little bit of rigidity because of its form. And so initially, you have to add, 30 pounds of pressure to start bending the metal. But once you start bending the metal, it bends kind of easy, and so it gets easier to crush. And then once you've crushed it quite a bit, then it gets harder to crush again. So it's not a great spring. It's not storing the energy, so it's a terrible spring in that sense. It's not a great measuring device. It's just the simple answer, right? Because it isn't proportional. Where the spring is very proportional, which makes it a good measuring device. Now, two magnets would be also a very good measuring device. Lots of things are good measuring devices because they're very consistent through a whole range of movement in terms of, how much deformation they will endure and show you, how much energy you have. All right, so the point is if they had, in the 1700s, if they had done this experiment, the one he did, okay, same experiment, really. I mean, okay, whether you swing the object in or whether you drop it straight down doesn't make any difference, okay, we know that. So, it has some different features, but it's essentially the same experiment. And all you're doing is saying, let's put the clay here, let's penetrate the clay versus let's squish the clay. And you can understand why the squishing is probably a better idea, because it'd be like a water balloon. You could have just used a water balloon and just measured how much the water balloon compressed, and then it would give back the energy. See, the clay doesn't give it back, so they can just sit here and say, let's just measure it, because it doesn't give it back. It doesn't store the energy and then release it back again. So it has some advantages, and the deformation is permanent, so to speak. But clearly, if they had done this experiment, okay, this 2010, who knows when the show was made, experiment versus this 1735 experiment, all the physics would be different. E equals mv squared would have been... It wouldn't have seemed like a great idea, mc squared. It wouldn't have been obvious to anybody because they would have had this 1/2 mv squared. Well, again, let's understand. It started off as mv squared, no half in front of it. So until 1845, it was mv squared. And, of course, it got really bad answers. This is so skeptical. This is so garbage. And again, this show proves that it's garbage. I mean, it proves it two ways. First, this clay experiment proves, it's only twice. We only got twice as much compression. Four times the gravitational height. Okay. Yeah, it's still only twice the velocity. No squared velocity is the outcome. The outcome doesn't show that. So they are overtly showing you it's not four times the compression. It's only twice. Then the cars are also showing it. It's only twice the compression, not four times. So you have every proof that this MV, 1/2 MV squared thing is just wrong. And the fact that it is a free energy, I mean, it does turn a lever into a free energy device. I mean, should I really have to keep making these arguments over and over and over and over and over? I mean, force is weight, force is momentum, force is force. Force is work. It's all the same thing. It's all just the capacity to move a mass, okay, with a velocity. And that's all there is. All right, now there is another subject I thought of that was sort of interesting. It has to do with this misperception people have about rockets and, you know, whether they need to push on something. And the fact is, they sort of do, okay, in a sense, if you're going to measure their energy. So we'll do that subject, and then maybe we'll play some of the clips as I was going to. But there's almost no point. I mean, there's no room for an argument. Right? It's right there. It's right there. Okay? Twice the velocity, twice, this thing will compress twice as much. It's right there in front of you. Car crashes. Twice the velocity, the car pretty much compresses twice as much. It's just kind of obvious. Really shouldn't be any more conversation. I mean, it should be just conceded. They made a mistake. They did the wrong clay experiment. All right, I've used, space analogies because that's really ideal. You get rid of all this friction stuff, all the stuff that can make a mess out of what you're trying to discern. So I've used the idea of turning a spaceship and, something I thought of, was what if you did the lifting a rocket off the Earth, for example, kind of example. So I've sort of pointed out that what's really happening when you use thrusters on a spaceship is that you have a sealed container that has pressure in it, okay, and the pressure is moving in all directions in the vessel. And all you're really doing, like the fire extinguisher or something, is you're making a hole in the vessel. And you're just saying, okay, I can put a real hole right here. Or I can tie a hose to it and make the hole go any way I want. So with a hose, I can make the hole go in this direction. Okay. And all I'm really doing is changing this, where the gas is going to escape. So I'm just saying wherever the hole is, whatever direction the hole is the direction I'm really letting out, because this pressure will be universal. It'll be in all directions inside the hose, too. So it's moving in all directions inside the hose, just like it moves in all directions inside the vessel. So it's pushing on the outside of the vessel. It's pushing on the outside of the hose. It's pushing in all directions. So all you're really doing is just taking this thing, okay, and you're making a hole. And what does the hole mean? It means anything going this way gets out. And all the stuff going this way doesn't get out. So you have less stuff hitting the wall. So just think of this as a wall and this is a wall. What are you doing? You're hitting this wall with more pressure than you're hitting this wall, because this wall has a hole in it. So some of the pressure is getting out. This side isn't getting hit as often. Therefore, this wall has to move. Because this wall is tied to this wall, this one's going to have to move too. So that's why it moves. Okay, it moves in this direction because you're hitting this wall more and you're hitting this wall less because you let it out. All right, and that's the simple mechanics. So the idea would be, though, right, is that the vessel has to be tied to the ship. So if I actually did have a rocket and then I just put a rocket inside the rocket, okay, and I just have a little rocket inside my rocket and it's just sitting there, because it's weightless, I just stick it there. And then I fire the little rocket's engine, in the sense that I let the gas out, okay, and I can ignite it and create extra pressure. I can do things to increase the amount of pressure, and therefore increase how much I'm letting out. But the fact is this won't change this at all. This, okay, is going to be completely irrelevant to this. Just like when you lift a rocket off the Earth, it's pretty much irrelevant to the Earth. Now, the initial exhaust does hit the surface, So you're going to get a little bit on this surface, more than this surface, obviously. So you get a little bit of an effect. But it'll be, frankly, quite tiny. And this will shoot out of your rocket, and you won't turn. The rocket won't turn. Because you really didn't do anything to the mass of the rocket. You used chemical pressure that was in a container, and you just moved the container out. All right? The container absorbed the energy, not the whole rocket. Now, the simple change you make is you just tie the rocket to the ship in some way and then use a spring to launch it. Well, now you're using, this surface is connected to this surface, and now when you launch it, you're losing real mass, real energy from your ship. You're releasing real pressure, so you're going to go this way because now you've let some real pressure loose. So anyway, it's a subtle little thing. But just to be clear, when I use this analogy, obviously, I've sort of said it before in the sense that if you had a gun and the bullet, and you don't have either one of them attached to the ship, right? So say this was a gun, all right, and I'm going to fire it, and there's a window for the gun to fly out, and there's a window for the bullet to fly out. Well, obviously, nothing's going to happen to the ship. I mean, I'm going to shoot a bullet out, I'm going to shoot a gun out, and I'm not going to get anywhere. But if I tie the gun to the ship, okay, and then fire the bullet with 2,000 joules of energy, right? It has the same momentum as the gun, okay, but it's 2,000 and the gun only has 2. That's the kinetic energy theory. So obviously the kinetic energy theory, I think you can understand, is bullshit because it really isn't going to matter. It isn't going to matter whether I tie the bullet down and let the gun fly out or if I tie the gun down and let the bullet fly out. Either way I do it, I'm going to get the same amount of torque on the spaceship because it's really the same amount of energy. And this number is just made up. It's just a fantasy. You'll never collect these 2,000 joules. You'll never collect these 2,000 watts of energy ever because they don't really exist because the mv squared is bullshit. It's nonsense. This does not happen. And really, if you look at it, the experiments show it. And they show it over and over again in some sense. And you can know it intuitively from all the other examples where, if it were true, it would show itself. Professional bowlers would be using lighter bowling balls. Because the fact is, by their theory, they have more energy. And wrecking balls wouldn't even exist because it'd be so much better to shoot bullets at buildings to knock them down. It'd be so much better to use lighter objects with higher velocities than heavy objects with slow velocities. And the fact is, it's not better. And the slower ones are easier to control and they have the same energy. So you use the big thing. That's why the bowlers use the heavy ball, is because it's easier, less chance of screwing up. Speaking of the screw-ups. Alright, so back to the Mythbuster. The reason why they made this episode, the reason why they're doing these experiments, isn't to illustrate what they should be illustrating, which is the kinetic energy theory doesn't work. Okay, because that's pretty much what they're proving, pretty decisively. But the question really came up because of a scenario that, you know, they really should be able to figure this out, okay? You crash a car into an immovable object, and that's the key thing, right? We know that energy is always going to go wherever it's easiest for it to go. The easier thing to crush will get crushed first, okay? So, so they crash a car at 50 miles an hour, into a brick wall. Okay, and then they crash a car at 100 miles an hour into a brick wall. And obviously in both of these cases, okay, you have essentially one measuring device, the car. You're using it like a spring. You're just throwing a spring at the wall and saying, how much does the spring compress? How much does the spring compress? That's telling you how much pressure you're applying, essentially. And then you ask the question, well, what happens when you take two of the 50s and you crash them into each other instead of the wall? All right. Now, obviously, for the people in the car, okay, going 50 miles an hour, it doesn't make any difference to them because this is going to be the brick wall. They're not going to go somewhere. This car isn't going to go over here, and this car isn't going to go over here. So it's the same as hitting the brick wall for the people in the car. So they're still going to do exactly the same thing. They're going to compress a certain amount, and that's it. But it's basically, you're just saying, I have two springs in the experiment, okay? I'm going to bounce a spring into a spring. So obviously, it's not giving you a very good illustration because you'd say, yes, there's only springs compressed this amount. There's only a spring compressed this amount. But obviously, if you put the spring here, all right, and measured the impact of the two 50s coming together with a spring here, one spring, like there is here, this is one spring. You could theoretically put the one spring here and measure the amount of compression. Have this made out of a solid steel, compress the spring for at 100 miles an hour. And the fact is these two things will equal each other, okay? So the compression you're actually creating, the highest pressure, will be equal to the 100, okay? The 250s will equal the 100. They don't equal 50. It's just kind of obvious, except for the people inside the car. The people outside the car, the person in absorbing the impact, this spring would feel the same amount of pressure as the 100 crash with the 250s. So that even is in itself is almost so trivial, you're saying, well, how could they screw that up? But they did. So I'll just play a couple of the clips and that'll be it. I mean, this conversation is really so broken and stupid that it really shouldn't take place. I mean, this should have been resolved 100 years ago, let alone now. And the fact that there's still resistance to recognizing that this is all just nonsense. I mean, this MV squared crap is just that. It's crap. It's just a nonsense. It's a fable. It's not based on anything reasonable, and it can't. It just breaks physics. It makes a mess out of it. It creates free energy paradoxes, and it's just really dumb. All right, so there was a couple of places where they mentioned the kinetic energy thing, so I guess I'll go try to find that, which I think is a different video than the video I have loaded. So I will go find the right video, because this isn't it. So he might have mentioned kinetic energy somewhere in here, you know, that it's supposed to be four times as much. But it isn't. It's only twice as much. But the tin can crushing bit, I'll play that again. All right, I believe I have found the proper place. And so we'll just play this little clip and just leave it at that because it says it all.
This may just seem like some gratuitous violence, but there's actually some really interesting science going on when you compare these two impacts.
The interesting science is that you're trivializing a lot of complex science. So like even the idea of them trying to measure the G-forces, when you know, you look at the cars, you know there's pieces going in all kinds of different directions. You can't measure the G-forces of an object that's moving in all kinds of different directions, okay? G-forces are only in specific directions. So obviously that's not going to really work. Okay, there's no real way in a compound crushing event for you to measure G-forces accurately. That is, in a way that would tell you the total energy of the system, because the G-forces are going to be going in all kinds of directions.
You would think that doubling the speed would give you twice the severity of the impact, but...
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly what it does, okay? That's exactly what your cars show. That's exactly what the clay shows.
The physics says you're actually looking at more like four times the severity.
All right, you're not looking at it. So that's the whole point, right? Physics says you're looking at. No, you're not looking at. You're not seeing it. You're not. There's no experiments demonstrating. There's no experiments collecting it. You're using these two cars as collection devices. They're not collecting it. They're not showing it. Okay? It's not apparent at all. It's not apparent that the smaller wrecking balls knock down more buildings. It's not apparent, okay, that you can create a lever and have 100 joules over here and 400 joules of energy on this side, and it would oscillate perfectly. It makes no sense. So, you know, this is just part of the lie. So he's saying, okay, physics says it's four times. Now I have to come up with some excuse why we're not measuring four times. We're not measuring anything close to four times. We're barely getting two times. The fact is they're a little short of two times.
The impact. Our sensors are showing three times the G's.
Right, so the sensors doing, like I said, you see this car lifting up. Obviously the G-forces are in two directions now. You don't have a G-force measuring device that can do that math and figure that out. So that's already telling you that what's the point of measuring the G-forces? They're in all kinds of different directions.
And our wreckage is showing about twice the damage. So what's going on here? Well,
So this is the excuse. See, I didn't realize when I first watched it. He's making excuses for why the kinetic energy isn't showing itself, why it isn't obvious in the experiments. So he won't be able to use this example as for the clay, right? We know the clay is like shooting toothpaste out of a tube. We know the clay is like a water balloon. We know it works really well until you know, almost it works quite perfectly until there's no space to compress anymore, almost. So it's such a good spring. It's such a good measuring device compared to your tin can example.
Just like this can.
All right. The can is a little bit hard at first, then it gets really easy to compress, and then it gets hard again. So yeah, tin cans are rotten springs, right? They're not clay, they're not anything good in terms of their uneven deformation based on the fact that you have to bend the metal in all kinds of different directions to gain your compression. So yeah, it's really uneven. So what? The devices you were using aren't tin cans.
The more I crush it, the more it resists crushing.
Right. Now, we know in a spring that really isn't true, okay? So the spring does a proportional thing until you run out of spring. You ran out of can. It doesn't get harder to crush until you run out of can. You've condensed the metal. You've gone beyond the spring's capacity to absorb any more energy. So yes, everything has a limitation in terms of how much energy you can put in and whether it can measure anymore. Rulers have an end to the ruler. Yeah, so what? That certainly doesn't make an excuse for the fact that you're doing these experiments in different ways and the outcome is always the same, which is it's not four times as much, it's twice as much energy.
There's some complex physics going on here, but you don't have to be a rocket scientist to understand.
So you sort of do have to be a rocket scientist, because the rocket scientists know in space how it all works and how, yeah, the fact is that if I shoot a bullet out one side with 2,000 joules and I shoot the gun out the other side with just 2 joules, I'm going to turn the ship exactly the same amount. So the rocket scientist does know that momentum works and this crap doesn't. This mv squared nonsense doesn't work. So they proved it doesn't work. They proved it doesn't show up anywhere. And they're just, again, making rationalizations for why it isn't revealing itself. Silly ones in the sense that tin cans aren't anything like a blob of clay. So that's a bad example. Now, a tin can might be something like a car, but you can even understand that the car has, you know, there is a certain consistency to the compressibility of the steel and the different parts, and so it will, to some extent, behave consistently until you get it really, really smushed.
Stand it. The cars speak for themselves.
Well, if the cars spoke for themselves, then this wouldn't be a debate. So the whole point is you're actually arguing the cars don't speak for themselves. You're actually arguing the cars are lying to us. So it looks like twice the damage, but it's really four times the amount of energy. That's what you're arguing. So they don't speak for themselves. They don't tell you the truth. I mean, that's the irony. He's sitting here basically saying, don't pay any attention to these cars. They're lying to you. They're not real physics. The real physics says this yellow car got four times the amount of energy, not twice the amount of energy. It should be four times as compressed, not twice as compressed. I mean, it's not bad. All right, so anyway, that's probably enough. All right, so anyway. And again, the whole show is about proving something that was kind of a the point is they didn't measure it right. I mean, it's just kind of obvious that if you use one, if one instrument is collecting the energy, then 250s in the opposite direction will equal 100. Okay, it will equal the same thing as a 100-mile-an-hour collision in terms of how much impact, how much pressure something in between the 250s will feel. It'll squeeze the clay the same amount as the 100-mile-an-hour impact, and that's the truth. And if they'd done that experiment, they would have seen that result. And that's a fact. And so they proved something that just isn't true, and they ignored what all the evidence points to, which is there's no sign of this MV squared thing showing up anywhere. It doesn't happen in the real physical universe. Shit. Okay, so that's probably enough. Yeah. So I might make a third video on YouTube doing this one more time, but again, I've been making these arguments for a year. This is just completely validating everything I'm saying. I have been saying, this should be conceded. It's time for you people to concede. Yeah, you just don't have any evidence. All right. So, call it a video. So, till the next time and such and so forth and whatnot. This has been draftphysics.com. Debate physics also, but nobody will counter-argue any of these points made. None of them will be counter-argued in any way, shape, or form.